Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Ba-da-da-da-da. Hey, I have a special show. Hey, not on a Monday, not on a Friday, but on a Wednesday. I read this book I just think you guys should really know about, especially all my comedy listeners out there. It's interesting that so many of my guests I find through Facebook. And I happen to be seeing postings of this man and said, wow, you make a really good guest. I'd like to read that book. And our guest today is going to be very special standout guy, stand-up, John DeBellis. And he's written a great book called Stand-Up Guys, A Generation of Laughs, and it's a memoir by John DeBellis, and it is incredible when you think of the history of comedy, especially in New York City, and the man himself. John originally started his descent into helplessness as a stand-up comic before turning to writing because he needed another way to express his depression. He wrote jokes for Rodney Dangerfield, Johnny Carson, Letterman, Gabe Kaplan, Elaine Boozler, Billy Crystal, Joe Piscopo, and then he joined the writing staff of Saturday Night Live, the Today Show, Politically Incorrect. He was the head writer for the critically acclaimed DC Follies. I love that. That was the puppet show, right? And has written for sitcoms so bad to this day he's too embarrassed to cash the checks. He was, however, the supervising producer of the ACE Award-winning Joe Piscopo special on HBO and also produced the competing networks. Best special ever done about stand-up comedy, Comedy Club Superstars on ABC. And it goes on and on about this guy and his new book. And we're going to bring him on. Let's see. What do we have here coming up first? Let's get in the mood with a little Lucy Arnaz. And then we'll bring John on. Here we go, guys. Stand-up Guys, A Generation of Laughs.
Thank you.
like that, John DeBellis? A little Roomba Matumba?
Yeah, actually, I love Latin music. I have property in Nicaragua.
Oh, well, there you go. One hell of a town.
It.
You could buy
a
hacienda for a few pesos down. You know the song?
Yeah.
I think it's
actually
by,
cheaper than that down
what?
There.
What? I think it's Fields, the name of the composer.
anyway,
yeah, well, that was Lucy Arnaz. That was the tie-in to you. And I think in the background, that was from some tapes she found and she put together of her father's. And she sang on it, too, and combined it. So I thought the tie-in, since it was comedy, was terrific. And your book, oh, my goodness. You must have started when you were a kid because there's too many people in here that you know.
I think we all started when we were kids.
But it's great. So tell us about the book. Now, you've been doing stand-up, but not only stand-up, you're also a writer. And very impressive credits, by the way. And you have if people get the book, Stand Up Guys, A Generation of Laughs, it is so many nice people wrote so many nice things about you. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, I did the book originally. I was working on a magazine, kind of strange. It sounds like a weird kind of magazine to be working on, but I have I'll explain it. A friend, David Black, who's a writer, is nominated for a Pulitzer Prize and stuff, and he was working on some girly magazine called Perfect 10, but he was trying to make it into a Playboy, you know, like Playboy as far
yeah.
as the writing and stuff like that. So he hired a bunch of pretty well-known writers, and he asked me to write some stuff, and he asked me to write a short story about that time period. And the first story I wrote wasn't really about that time period. It's not even in the book. It was a story where I was sitting with Larry David. This was after Seinfeld, and we were sitting at a diner one day, and he goes to me, well, you know, typical Larry fashion, some of you are divorced now. Are you getting laid? You know, and I said, Larry, before I was divorced, I had hair. I said, it's much harder. And he said, I'll tell you what, for your birthday, I'll buy you a hooker. And I said, no, Larry, I'm not going to do that.
This is Larry David?
Yeah, Larry David.
Okay.
And I said, no, I can't do that, Larry. He said, come on. I said, I can't do that. So I go home, and I was living in L.A. at the time. And you know probably a bunch of these guys, Freddie Stoller.
Oh, yeah.
George Kaufer, Bill Rakusky. And
Yeah,
and I'm sitting around and I'm talking and I'm saying, and I told them what happened. And they said, this guy's worth, you know, several million dollars. I said, he's going to buy you a hooker. You got to do it. And I said, I'm not going to do it. He says, come on. You got to do it for us. You got to do it for us comics. Come on, us comics. Well, and they're making it like, we'll never have a chance ever again to do something like this, you know? So I call Larry back. And at first, I didn't know he was really kidding. But then once I told him the pressure I had from all these comics, he said, yeah, you got to do it. You know, you got, yeah, okay, you know, I'll do it. So I didn't know. I know nothing. You know, comics, you know, we're shy. If a necrophiliac, you know, if I was a necrophiliac, I'd wait for the corpse to make the first move. You know, that kind of stuff. So I literally didn't know what to do. So the first person I went to, I figured as a degenerate, I went to a jazz singer that I know, a jazz musician. I figured they go to hookers, you know, and he didn't know any. Then I went to another comic, and you probably know, Mike Reynolds, you know, who had a gambling problem. I figured Mike would know, you know. He didn't know. Yeah. So I finally found some guy whose parents had both died in a car crash when he was young. I figured this guy's really got to have problems, you know. And he did. He didn't know exactly where, but he told me to buy a magazine out in front of Cantor's. So I was hiding out in front of Cantor's, and old ladies kept walking by, and I had to wait till the old ladies were gone, and I found a magazine, and in the back of the magazine, you know, I went home with this guy, and we picked a picture of a girl, and we said, okay, and we called her up, you know, and, you know, I didn't really look that closely at stuff. I called her up, made an appointment, you know, for her to come over and stuff, and I'm just divorced, you know, I don't know, you know, it's like I haven't dated anybody really, so I'm pretending like it's a date, and I'm getting dressed up, but I'm putting cologne. I didn't wear cologne. I'm putting cologne on. I'm putting Sinatra music on. And I really, I'm, this is no exaggeration, you know. And I'm waiting, and then, you know, I finally get a knock on the door. I open the door, and what I thought was the girl's profile was really the front of her face. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It was she was not what she looked like in
the
any
magazine.
Sense. Yeah, any sense. So I didn't know what to do. I'm trying to, you know, to get my money back in the beginning a little bit, you know, and then I figured I can't insult her. Actually, I didn't try. I didn't want to at that point because I didn't want to be insult her. You know what I mean? So I figured if I had enough drinks, I really wouldn't care. You know, and this is God's honest truth. This is all true. And I'm drinking and drinking, trying to get drunk enough to make her attractive. You know, and then she finally drags me towards the bedroom, and I'm passing in the hallway, and I'm showing pictures of my relatives and, you know, dead relatives and everybody, you know, just trying to delay going back there. I'll shorten it a bit now, and we get to the back of the room. We're in the room, and I turn on the stereo, which, you know, barely was above a squeak anyway. It was a cheap thing. And she starts to dance. And that's all she does is dance, I find out. You know, now I figured out why. I mean, if you look at it, that's probably all anybody would want. Anyway, I don't want to put her down, but that's, you know, it was like looking, and it was like watching a lava lamp. That
now, this is the
really
connection
work
to the book somehow, right, the hooker?
Yeah.
Okay.
And anyway, so I tried to get my money back. I even called the agency up on the phone to try to get my money back. And, you know, and I'm arguing. Then there's another knock on the door, and I go running to the back of the door. And I was afraid just a couple of my women friends, because I'm always been close to a lot of women friends and women comics. And I get to the back door, and it's this big, big black guy, and now I'm drunk. So I'm saying, give me my money back, or I'm gonna beat you up. The guy's laughing at me. I said, I'm gonna beat you up. Come on. You know, and you know, my grandfather was a mobster, you know, and I'm telling him all this stuff, and he's laughing. All he did was laugh at me, and he kept laughing at me. So finally I just gave up. He went outside, and I didn't know what to do. I figured I have an hour. I'm not going to let the girl go. And I made him miserable. What I did is I put the TV on, and I found some old of my stand-up tapes and made her watch them for an hour. Now, and then when I told Larry about that, what happened, he said, he told me, he goes, that was the best money I ever spent.
You know, that and almost sounds like an episode of Larry David.
Larry said, and that's how that started. That short story started me writing the book.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. All right. From
so
a bad business investment on your birthday.
Yeah.
That came about. So tell us about the book now. You have so many interesting stories in there and so many people. Who would you like to talk about?
First, let me just say that the book is the way I did the book, just so people know, is I had gone to really big publishers, and I'd gotten really close, and I'd gotten you know, to that final committee, and they all insisted on the same thing. They said, if we want us to do the book, it's got to be just about the big names, you know, and I wouldn't do it. I didn't want it because there's so many comics. You know so many of the
oh,
guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that
so
are so
many who like you go, whatever happened to them?
Yeah, and that are funny. I mean, you know, Glenn Hirsch, you know, if you know Glenn Hirsch, Jack Raymond. I don't know if you knew, never knew Jack Raymond.
No, I don't know. I came in the 80s, more towards
he
the 80s.
He was one of the funniest guys. He'd dress up.
But I did know Rita Rudner.
Rita Rudner.
Robert Wall.
Wall. It's all about
Wall. Yeah, we were on Comedy Tonight, same episode.
Oh, Wall's a great guy.
Gilbert Godfrey, I know,
base.
Because from the Friars Club.
There's a lot of well-known guys. I mean, you know, like...
Your Larry
like
David stories are hilarious in here.
Oh, Larry. Well, I was very close with Larry. We was like family, you know, and I'm still close. I just literally went to... I was in L.A. about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and I went to... Larry calls me up, and he says, John, do you want to go to this visit my brother Ken? Because Ken was in my wedding party. That's how close we all became, you know? And so we drove to San Diego with Larry... drove down with Larry. And typical Larry fashion... We get to Ken's house. We get 6 feet into the house. me and Ken first, Larry third. The dog, Ken's huge dog, decides to attack Larry, jumps on Larry, attacks him, bites him, draws blood. Larry falls into the bathroom. We have to lock the bathroom door with the dog pounding on it, you know.
Well, that's
and it's
the
typical Larry.
Guys. Yeah, typical Larry. Stand-up guys. It's nice because you mentioned it's a unique group of young comedians, including Larry David, Richard Lewis, Richard Belzer. I remember when Belzer used to MC. Bill Mayer,
scary,
Gilbert Gottfried,
right?
Rita Renner, Joe Piscopo, Paul Reisner, Jerry Seinfeld, and all the camaraderie, and you mentioned a lot of the Elaine Boozler. Let's not forget Elaine Boozler. And you mentioned so many comedians. And I got to say, I've done a lot of reviews of comedy books, and yours is one of the few books that really goes in depth, and you give credit to the women comedians. And I just have to see, we have the chat room open here, too, so I must mention who's listening. You've got Cyanide in Amsterdam is listening to you, T.C. Keith.
Oh, wow.
He's a musician. I don't know where T.C. Keith is located, but George Bettinger. Do you know George Bettinger's show, Mom and Pop Shop?
No.
It's another radio show. George, he might be a good guest for you, too, George. The Mom and Pop Shop, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I believe, at 4 p.m. now on Hot Mix 106. I'm giving out plugs to my friends. Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, 4 p.m. But George Bettinger has interviewed a lot of comedians, Pat Cooper, you know, the older guys, and everyone like that. Worth a listen, The Mom and Pop Shop. Friend him.
Oh, great.
And so let's talk about the books more. Where can they buy this book?
Well, it's all over. It's all over the internet, any place. It's hardcover, soft cover.
Is it on
Amazon?
Can they
Barnes
get it on Amazon?
Amazon, most people get it. Barnes and Noble, all over the place. I mean, just
about
everywhere.
And are you still doing stand-up?
Yeah, every once in a while. You know, I did a Catch a Rising Star in Princeton maybe a half year ago with Steve Middleman. Because Smith and I have been
Middleman,
friends.
Steve Middleman, another voice from the past. I got to do another plug. Sorry, they go to my chat room. I got to remember. Betty Jo Tucker from Movie Attic Headquarters will be featuring saluting nominee Hugh Jackman every Tuesday at 4 p.m., February 5th. Betty Jo Tucker, Movie Attic Headquarters. Okay. That's great. So this book, they can pick it up anywhere. Can they go to your website and find it?
Yeah. The website is called, and it's interesting, it's called 920spot.com. And the story behind that is that that was my favorite spot at the Improv on Saturday night. The 920 spot was the first spot.
That is a good spot.
And that was a spot Lane Boozler told me to do. She used to say, John, do the first spot because for two reasons. She said, that's the spot you're going to wind up doing when you work on the road with a big act or anything. You're going to wind up, because, you know, most of the time they worked with music acts back then. And that's the spot you got to learn. And it's also, if you do that spot, you can get across town to catch and do the first show there, then maybe get
you
one
know,
of the
John,
comic strip.
I'd rather, people say that, well, what, don't you like the headline? I go, no, it's too much pressure. I said, I'd rather MC or feature. And
Rita
wait a minute,
Redna.
We have somebody calling in. Let's see. I hope it's not one of your prank friends.
No, I didn't tell you. You know.
Okay. Hello, who's on the air? Hello. Anybody here? Okay. It's
might
a nine,
be one of my friends sleeping yet. That's
910 area code.
Well, most of my friends are asleep, so that's.
All right. Well, we have people calling in. We'll see. I'll put them on hold for now.
But.
So that's great.
This book really, though, is a labor. It's a labor of love. It's a memoir, but it's about a time period where everybody, we were all just really close friends, guys you never heard of that were hysterical. I started to mention Jack Raymond, who has the funniest story in the entire book. I don't want to even say it. Well, maybe I should. It's the most unusual story.
Sure, go ahead.
Of all time. Jack, first of all, had this weird act. Sometimes he'd dress up like a giant quaalude. I don't know, but he would. The language. What language can I use here? Is it okay?
Not, within PG reason. Just
okay.
Use
okay.
The simile.
I'll change the language. But he used to go on stage, and he had this. He looked like a cross between Captain Kangaroo and Kurt Vonnegut. You know, and he'd have this weird thing, and he'd walk on me. What a fat pig my wife is. She's a fat pig. I used to tell her to get the hell out of the house. Get the hell out of the house. She drinks 20 glasses of water a day. Now she's not fat. She's bloated. And he would do that. And then he would go on about working with pygmies and in.
It was a different era.
It was a different era. Wild stuff, you know.
I really feel, I don't know about you, but I feel that because I'm not a joke comedian.
Yeah.
I'm more. I do characters. I sing. You know, I do a little bit of everything. But I really feel that the comedians don't take chances anymore. And by that, I don't mean taking a chance by being foul on stage,
yeah.
or but they don't take comedy chances. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to talk about my uncle, or I'm going to talk about, and they might not laugh at every 10 seconds, but they might laugh at the end.
Yeah.
And they don't
yeah, well,
they don't take those chances anymore.
No, Larry took more chances than anybody. Larry,
oh, he was nuts. I mean,
he
sorry,
was nuts
but,
on stage. They literally, he would walk up on stage, look at the audience, and say, "I can't do this."
Yeah.
Smash the microphone, and they literally in the comic strip they just lost so many microphones they glued the microphone to the stand so Larry couldn't throw it down anymore.
But it's true. You also what was it like writing for Saturday Night Live?
It was okay. You know, Saturday Night was an okay gig, you know. There was a lot of infighting and a lot of craziness. That's why I don't talk about it that much, you know.
I've read the books on it. I know. I know. Well, you weren't there. You were after Alan Zweibel.
Yes, Zweibel actually wanted me on the show, tried to get me there on the second year.
He is such a nice guy.
Alan is one of the really, really nice guys, super helpful.
I know him from the
Friars
Club.
Wrote me a great
Club.
Review for the book.
I know him from the Friars Club. I was competing in a contest there, and he was one of the judges, and he couldn't have been kinder or more gentler, because a woman at that club competing it's tough. And he was, and even when you talk to him, he's so generous. And then I loved DC Follies. That was a hysterical
Fun. That was fun. That was with Fred Willard. And Fred Willard is, again, a real, I don't care what they say, it's the thing that happened to him, I have no idea. All I know, he's one of the nicest guys.
He's nutty.
He's nutty, but he's also, he's very quiet, and he was very polite. He would ask you, and again, I'm being literal here, he would ask you if you could change an A for a V. And then, if you said to him, okay, Fred, you know, at the end of the show, I just want you to ad lib, you and another performer, John Rourke, who was an impressionist that was on Fridays with Larry, and Fred would go on and ad lib this amazingly brilliant stuff.
Oh, he's a little bit nuts. Or one of the stories that I read somewhere was how a little bit off the thing goes. I can't believe the maid walked in on me naked. I had to wait for like 4 hours.
You're probably true with Fred.
So let's go back to this. Okay, your website. Say it again slow so they know where to go.
920spot.com.
920spot.com. You can
and I was
get
known for that back then. Yeah.
This is a great book. It's a great gift to give to, you know what, to John, why I really, really like this book is because comedians today don't do their homework.
Mm.
They had no idea what people had to go through to get where they are now. There weren't that many clubs in the 80s. There was just a couple. Some of them have disappeared. Who's on First? I think there was another one in the 30s. I can't remember it. Rocco ran it.
Yeah,
it was a weird club, right? It was always mafia people in there.
Yeah.
I used to go in there, and he would come up to me, and he knew I sang comedy songs. So he goes, oh, Nancy, I have some people. You should do a song. And, oh, no, I just got done. I'm really ways I can't. No, you understand. You should do it. And he goes, no, Nancy, you don't understand. I go, oh, okay, where's the couple? It would be some mafia guy and his mistress.
Oh, they're the hardest audiences. I had to work with mafia room one time, and in between shows, the women were laughing, the guys weren't. And I went into the men's room, and I had two shows, and the guy gave me money. And he said, leave the back door now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'm just like, what kind of group are they?
Well, Joe Piscopo got his nose broken at Catch a Rising Star, you know. So that's in here, you know. That he actually called a guy a hitman, and the guy wasn't a hitman, but the guy who was with, he was with the hitman. This guy called Johnny Rip, and he came out and he broke Joe's nose.
Oh, yeah, a friend of mine does Dean Martin Rat Pack shows, and he tells me horror stories. But it's all, I just think this is great. So what are your plans now? Let's get back to you. What are your plans now?
I just want to promote the book because, you know, I did this as a memoir but as a through line, and I wanted people, my whole goal was wanted the people to read the book and know what it was like to be a comedian back then, not just even the stories, but, you know, what it was like to go on stage for the first time, what it was like to work your way up the ranks, what it was like to be, you know,
and
become
it's
a heavyweight.
And it's so different because your book does explain that for any comedians who are listening who really want to know about this. He explains what the process was. There was a process. It wasn't like now it's a horror to me. It's a horror in that it's not about talent. It's how many friends do you got that'll come to pay see you.
Yep, and how many of them will help? I mean, we come off stage and people say, "A nice set," and then they would help you. They'd say, "This is a topper here. If you change this line here, you know, and you get this punchline here," and it was the norm. It was everybody helping
each other? There's some old school people I find, and I try to help the young comics when I can, just the ones that really I think are in it for the long haul. But there's great people out there. Jane Condon is very generous. Maureen Langdon. And there's a lot of, even Jackie Martling, John Pease.
Oh, I love Jackie.
Yeah,
he's the nicest guy.
He is the nicest guy. And
there
are people out there who still are generous that way. But these young comics are just, I find them, and not in a bad way, but the majority of them very self-serving, don't even bother to learn the history of comics.
No,
they don't do their homework.
No, what it is, part of it is there's money, and there's quicker money, and they want to do their 5 or 10 minute spots or whatever they want to get. But there was no money when we were working. There was nothing. We worked for $6 a set, you know, and that was camp fare.
Or it's upstate, but they'll feed you.
You remember that stuff too? Yeah.
You got a car? I can book you.
That's
but you
true.
Haven't seen
That's
my
true.
Act. I don't care. You got a car?
That's true. Remember Jerry Stanley when he did the Jerry Stanley gigs? I don't know if you knew. It was probably before your time. Jerry Stanley was the first one he did in the Jersey gigs. He booked all these clubs in New Jersey for $50. And I remember the first. I was one of the first guys to do the show. And I had my friend Lenny Maxwell, who's in the book here, was one of my mentors. Guy who discovered Woody Allen, actually, and he had got tickets to Sinatra, and I had turned down those tickets to Sinatra for a $50 gig in the boondocks of Jersey because it was like a first gig, you know. But that's how desperate you were.
Yeah, it's great. So let me get the book. Where I can't believe how fast I could talk to you for hours. How fast the time has gone.
Yeah,
but Stand Up Guys: A Generation of Laughs, a memoir by John DeBellis. Also, John, do you have any CDs out, or any books or other things?
No,
out?
I have a movie, an obscure independent movie that I wrote and directed called The Last Request, which is stars. T.R. Knight was the guy from that hospital show. I always forget the name of it. It was big. But Danny Aiello's in it. Gilbert's in it. Piscopo's in it. Frank Vincent Pastore.
Oh,
Tony
Lobianca, I wrote to Vincent Pastore at the Friars Club.
He's a nice guy, too.
Yeah, a lot of nice guys. But what's great, like I said, I highly recommend this book. When I get a chance, I'll go do the review on Amazon for you.
Oh, thank you.
A memoir by John DeBellis, DeBellis. Oh, I hope I spelled it right in the promo.
You got it.
Okay. And Stand Up Guys, A Generation of Laughs. Say your website again. We got 40 seconds.
Okay, 920spot, the number 920spot.com.
920 spot, and that is my favorite spot, too. That is mine. And you know what? I tell comics who are always afraid, either go, anybody want to go up first? I go, I'll do it.
Yes, it's the best.
And because it's always been lucky for me. I won some contests because I said, I'll do it first. They said, you weren't the funniest one, but you were the bravest.
That's funny. That's how I listen. That's how I got right on Saturday Night Live. Was I did the first spot, not to audition to do the show as a performer. I wasn't even auditioning. I just did it because I wanted to get up first and go to another club. And then they said, well, we like your writing.
There you go. The same thing, if you get a chance, listen to Alan Zweibel's story about writing.
Alan's great.
His new book, Lunatics, everybody, it's going to be a movie. Our guest today has been the wonderful John DeBellis. Please check him out if he's performing anywhere. Go Facebook friend him so you can know where he is next. And get this great book, Stand Up Guys, A Generation of Laughs. You will really enjoy it. I highly recommend it. Thank you so much, John, for being a guest.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you very much.
On
keep
today's
in touch,
show.
Please. Okay.
And everybody follow him. Go to Facebook. Let me see. You've got Florida. wherever TC Keith is, and he posted in the chat room, this little chat room, he posted your info, and Cyanide Outside of Amsterdam is your new fan. So go Facebook friend him, guys, okay?
I work in Amsterdam, tell him, so it was great. I love Amsterdam.
Okay. Thank you,
with Kelly
John.
Rogers. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being on the show. We're going to go out with one of my scat songs. You're terrific,
thank you,
John.
Thank you.
Best wishes. Bye.
You too. Bye.
I once dreamed of being chased through a dollhouse by a white lobster that wore glitter and spoke with a French accent. Now, what this meant, I'll never know. But I do know if I told anybody, I'd be labeled a lunatic. And labeling is wrong unless it's for the public good. Let's say you're at a party, and you can take out a labeling gun and start tagging people like they do in Wild Kingdom. Wacker. Loser. Use your favorite name. That would really be good. But not too friendly like the guys in the office, or your boss who's really nice. Except in an earthquake, you'd really be thinking, he's old. He's slow. I can beat him to the Georgia. Oh, yeah. LA's a jammed up situation. I have enough faults, I wouldn't purposely build my home over one. The one time I was naive enough to think that generic food was for the elderly. It made sense to me at the time. All those big black and white labels. And then a friend pointed out, Nancy, there's a difference between generic and geriatric. Boy, did I feel foolish not to be confused with that. But I do think they have a lot to do with each other, since men tend to do a lot of thinking from that area. What all this has to do with nothing is, don't you know? How my brain works and connects things. Like so. So anytime you think I'm crazy, you're probably right. Thank you.